around 5 years ago, SGV and company started a campaign on financial regulatory reform and what it means for bank business models. Although what we will be discussing here are somewhat dated, we will be making some subsequent annotations, particularly with respect to where we are in terms of the regulatory agenda, and also with respect to how financial institutions are dealing with what we call for now disruption costs. And when we say disruption costs, it would pertain to how the developments in the wider environment are forcing banks to rethink or even probably revamp their business models. Banks face a sobering truth. The clear response under the intoxicating regulatory environment is to accept and adapt. The regulatory fine print and national versions of the reforms may still be in various stages of finalization, but enough is now known and can be known to assess the aggregate impact and to consider the effects of regulatory changes on banks' business models and the interdependent implications with the broader economy. This broadcast will not cover the current state of financial regulatory reform, but we will cover a framework for taking a strategic approach to understanding and managing the implemented and upcoming regulatory changes. We can broadly divide regulations into type 1 regulations, which cover capital adequacy, liquidity, and leverage, and which are designed to reduce the probability of bank failure. On the other hand, we also have type 2 regulations, especially on recovery and resolution planning, or RRP, and over-the-counter derivatives reforms designed to reduce the impact should a bank experience difficulties or fail. In the Philippine context, what we have so far is the recovery plan. And with respect to OTC derivatives reforms, the regulations have started to focus more on the role of central clearing parties, or CCPs, and who should be responsible. Previously, we broadly explored the implementation issues occurring around the world, whether that's in the US, in Europe, for which we distinguish continental Europe and UK, also broader Asia Pacific, but you will also see that there are fragmented regulations and disparities within the region. And we concluded that synchronized implementation will not happen because of their respective local regulatory reforms, evolving market conditions and rapid transmission risks, and the depth and commitment in changing the structural aspects of their economies. We also have to consider that while some jurisdictions are implementing these reforms as an offshoot or in response to a crisis situation, while we need to contrast this with regions like ASEAN and Asia Pacific, wherein they are not coming from a period of a crisis, but if they don't act, they will be facing more of the risks of stagnation. So this is, we need to draw a distinction between or with respect to the economic context of the different regions when appreciating the pace of financial regulatory reforms. Just to clarify that when we talk about financial regulatory reforms, we are pertaining mainly to the strength both at the micro and macro level of the financial institutions, and there is an emerging attempt to make a connection through the management of transmission risks between the financial sector and the broader economy. But we need to distinguish it from capital market reforms, which we will cover in a separate broadcast. In our subsequent discussions, we will focus on three strategic themes under the financial regulatory reform discussion. And these are, number one, reforming business models in an uncertain environment. Number two, accept and adapt strategies for an industry under siege. And number three, preparing for industry consolidation and structural reforms. Some commentaries on reforming business models in an uncertain environment. Clearly, uncertainty is the new certainty. The post-crisis view is that the broader economy and the public's exposure to systemic and transmission risks must always be minimized, if not eliminated. This therefore leads to a fundamental rethinking of the universal banking model and the rise of two types of strategic costs: balance sheet costs and disruption costs. Let's start with balance sheet costs. The global economic downturn then, along with the rapid financial deleveraging and excess capacity in areas like investment banking, are forcing banks to downsize many activities. The previous originate to distribute business model has contracted severely, especially in the securitization and off-balance sheet trading markets. This changes the nature of balance sheet usage and liquidity needs going forward. It also shifts the break-even costs for many businesses, compounded further by the higher regulatory costs for capital market-related activities. Three things are certain for banks in the medium term, and subsequently, we will have to backtest this view, which we formulated around 5 years ago. Number one is costs need to be cut while implementing higher regulatory requirements. Number two, capital and funding pressures will remain high. And number three, an integrated risk finance view must be taken when managing and optimizing balance sheet costs. Banks have started to embark on cost rationalization and efficiency programs against the backdrop of a fundamental regulatory change that imposes additional costs and investment requirements, especially in the areas of financial services risk management, compliance, and data infrastructure. One of the main costs of global banking, compensation, remains sticky and will only gradually come down. Moreover, pressure to contain bonuses relative to the fixed component of the salary will further increase operating leverage. Most banks, especially those subject to counter-cyclical buffers and systemically important financial institution surcharges, need to continue raising capital in an environment where return on equity expectations are not falling, commensurate with the decline in leverage of the banking sector. Tighten and rigorously implement business plans and quote-unquote shrink the balance sheet if necessary. Again, I have to emphasize the caveat that this discussion might be more applicable for regions that are coming from a crisis as opposed to regions that are experiencing growth. The longer-term view is that there will still be customer demand for the full range of banking services, notwithstanding the increased balance sheet costs. But to get there, banks must assess the viability of business lines and products in the face of increased capital and liquidity levels and costs, greater systems and data infrastructure investments, higher compliance costs, and outright activity restrictions or structural constraints. Banks will have to develop both planning and aggregation tools to manage against a new set of constraints, including risk-based capital, the leverage ratio, and the liquidity and stable funding ratios. This would mean close and synchronized coordination across risk, finance, planning, and treasury functions to understand how this, how different business decisions affect cash flow and earnings projections, risk profiles, and regulatory capital requirements subject to the new constraints. Banks also need to move beyond pure regulatory compliance and optimize the use of new tools required by regulations to manage risk and grow the businesses. Here are three practical operating considerations. Number one, use consistent, granular, and integrated risk finance data in support of operational agility and capital adequacy evaluation. Number two, enhance asset liability management and fund transfer pricing to segment and price products effectively in the face of growing competition from non-banks and quantify the cost-benefit proposition on customer relationships. Number three, revisit profitability measurement methodologies in relation to clarified or revised operating models, with risk capital either being allocated to certain businesses or included as a financial decision variable, not just a capital adequacy metric. The convergence of risk finance measures will become the performance norm. Risk finance is fast becoming the new language of business, not just in financial stability standards. This is highly evident in financial reporting, an area that in the past often lags in terms of developments in value-based reporting. There is increasingly a current value balance sheet, more business model-based revenues and gains, expected value-based measures for such costs and expenses as provisioning and impairment, and a comprehensive income measure that encompasses the hybrid performance-based operating income, which mainly is a management view, and flow-based comprehensive income, mainly as a shareholder view. In separate broadcasts, we will discuss RAPM, or risk-adjusted profitability measurement, and Basel 3 and IFRS 9. Again, previously we talked about balance sheet costs and disruption costs under the discussion on financial regulatory reform and what it means for bank business models. And this was roughly around 5 to 6 years ago. And at that time, we already introduced the concept of disruption costs. Every business model has three overlapping facets: the strategic imperative, the operating model, and the financial model. In our previous discussion, we focused mainly on balance sheet costs in the operating and financial models, while disruption costs are in the realm of the strategic imperative, and recently we are encountering it more and more with innovation and digitalization. In a technical paper by Saunders and Walter in the Journal of Financial Perspectives, they note that advances in transactions and information technologies, regulatory changes, geographic shifts in growth opportunities, and the rapid evolution of client requirements in combination have obliged financial firms to rethink their roles as intermediaries. This adds to the need for banks to incorporate disruption costs in their strategic and corporate planning, particularly in the scenario planning exercise, which, by the way, we touched on in a separate broadcast called Governance, the Return to Scenario Planning, and which was published back in 2012. In overseeing business model reforms or refresh, as well as disruption costs and its linkage with balance sheet costs, banks need to strengthen risk governance frameworks. This would mean demonstrating an appropriate balance between business strategy and risk appetite. Top-down assessments of risk capacity and appetite will need to be pushed down within the firm and influence the way businesses are managed, motivated, and compensated. Reporting to the board will need to be more rigorous and comprehensive. Reports will need to aggregate firm-wide exposures and identify risk concentrations under stressed economic and financial environments. There are cases when boards are not getting the right information to make decisions about the interaction of business strategies, associated risks, and the constraints imposed by capital and funding needs. This part will be discussed under the broadcast on stress testing, which is actually a strategic tool of the board of directors. The quality of information and metrics used to set and measure risk appetite is often insufficient to meet banks' business needs and regulatory expectations for more forward-looking risk and resilience assessments. While there have been structural changes in the governance process, many banks are still struggling to embed these processes in day-to-day line-of-business decision-making, even where banks meet both minimum buffers for capital and liquidity. Weaknesses in associated risk governance processes will bring intense supervisory responses that can impose substantial constraints on the businesses, both tactically and strategically. On the second theme, we will discuss what are the accept and adapt strategies for the financial sector.